Drupal Voices is a series of interviews with people contributing to the Drupal community. Brought to you by the 2011 Do It With Drupal Conference. This year's event takes place October 12th, 13th, and 14th in Brooklyn, New York. Come get practical advice and learn the site-building strategies of Drupal's top developers and hear from experts in emerging technologies such as IPTV and mobile app development. For more information and registration rates, visit doitwithdrupal.com.
I'm Sam Boyer. I was the migration lead for what we've been calling phase two of the Great Git migration, getting Drupal off of CVS and over to Git, which we finally wrapped up between Thursday, February 24th, and Friday, February 25th. This whole process really started a year ago. We had this massive community discussion, hundreds and hundreds of comments within, you know, a very, very short period of time, a sort of unprecedented level of community interest and participation. It ultimately culminated in the decision to switch over to Git. At that point, pretty quickly sort of diced it up and said, all right, we've got Git phase one, which is like basically creating a bunch of mirror repositories, not a big thing. And then phase two is everything else that gets us from CVS to Git. And the basic mandate at that point was that we wanted phase two to be a one-to-one feature parity. Everything that's in CVS, we'll have in Git. So that happened shortly before DrupalCon San Francisco. DrupalCon San Francisco showed some additional planning and some brainstorming around what we actually wanted to go into phase two, and some useful ideas definitely came out of there, but it became clear pretty quickly that we needed to actually hire somebody. So got hired on. Mid-June, I was brought on. And the notion from the beginning was that I was supposed to, you know, be part sort of code lead, part Marshall, coordinator, part, to make this whole thing go forward. And for the first few months of the project, were not especially, well, they were mixed. From my perspective, they weren't so bad. There was a lot of sort of plumbing work that needed to be done to get version control API and its related modules itself working. Version control API is the suite of modules which manages the interaction with Git itself. It was originally designed long ago by Jacob Pitsovitz. I'm not sure how to say his last name. Sorry, Jacob, once again. But for a Google Summer of Code project in 2006. So he designed that, and I took maintainership over in 2008, sounds right. And finally, you know, we came around. We said, okay, the goal of this project was to allow D.O to get off of CVS, and here we were going after it. But it needed a lot of work. So I did a lot of plumbing work for the first couple of months. The Git work got joined in with all of the redesign work. There was this meeting in Portland in early July where we all sort of sat down and we said, okay, what do we have in common? And we put together a sprint schedule and some general sort of timeline patterns that worked for a little while, basically sort of up until Copenhagen. But after that, the redesign really went a different path from the Git migration. And so we were sort of out in the cold for a little while. And September through October was not the best time for the Git migration. I was not producing a lot of work. Things were just sort of going fairly slowly. We had some project management shift ups, but somewhere around mid-October, we said, all right, let's get us back on track. And we got a new project manager in, Melissa Anderson, who is without which this project would not have happened. There are many people without whom this project would not have happened. So Melissa came in and we also said, all right, from the beginning, I had thought it would be a good idea to develop some sort of lieutenants, some folks whose specialty was a particular area within the migration. And I said, all right, instead of just having these lieutenants, and I'm doing air quotes here for everybody who can't see, which is everyone except Kent, but we had sort of had lieutenants up to this point. They had been sort of responsible for these areas, but basically I'd only ever individually consulted with them. We said, all right, let's change this around. Let's have a proper sprint structure, 2-week sprints. We lay out the things we want to do during these 2 weeks, and we have stand-up calls, and the people who are on those calls are me, PM, and lieutenants. And that made the difference. I mean, we went from sort of just things kind of up in the air and there being not particularly good communication to a lot of stuff just taking care of itself. I mean, even just the very first sprint was so productive and was so effective. It was spectacular. So yeah, I mean, we started having these calls every 2 days, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, in which we go over the things we were going for. And we often overestimated our sprints and whatever else, but the Git team really quickly turned into this vibrant group of people. And I would start naming them, except I know that I'm going to miss people, so I'm sorry, but I'm just not going to name anybody at the moment. We have so many people to thank for this. I can't do that. Are you kidding me? At the beginning, there was Marvel 07, who worked with me and was a Somar Code student on version control API the summer before. Howard Tyson, who just sort of came in out of nowhere and did so much stuff for us. Michael Brassoon, Mikey P, was there from the beginning working on project pieces and sort of just there throughout. And then we also had Trevor Hardcastle sort of show up out of left field and save us with our custom, we have an SSH daemon that's based on Twisted, which was written initially by Howard and then taken up by Trevor. There we go, and I've forgotten people already, and I'm sorry, everyone, I'm sorry. But so once that model really kicked off, things just exploded, and we were churning through work super quickly. November was really busy, December was busy, and then January got really busy. I was 14 hours a day, 7 days a week from January 1st until we launched, which was exhausting, but it was completely exhilarating at the same time. And we were sort of consistently about, 2 weeks behind or so of our general estimate, which is remarkable. I mean, we generated this estimate that we would be done mid-February back in DrupalCon Copenhagen at the end of August. Yeah. And that estimate was largely a product of Angie Byron and Chris Strahl and I working on this document and going through these issue queue lists and saying, yeah, you know, that's what it about looks like. It looks like it's going to be done about mid-February. Those estimates did not account for the addition of sandboxes, which is one of these huge features that we added in November, recognizing there were some issues. We added that in, and we still hit our deadline. I mean, we launched February 24th, and really we said mid-February with bleed time up to the end of February. That was always the expectation. And somehow we hit it. But we got into January, we opened up for testing, which was always sort of a stable, rocky thing. One of the biggest things that has come out of this project is the need for a clearer, better dev staging prod situation for D.O itself. I'm of the belief that a better and maybe just clearer way that all operates is one of the single biggest things preventing people from being able to contribute more to D.O itself. But yeah, I mean, you know, we opened up for testing. We had lots of testers. We had lots of people hit it, and we had it work sort of remarkably well. And the rest is kind of history. I mean, we made it to migration night. There were some weird things that happened that night, but we sorted it all out. We came back up after about, I think it was ended up being 14 or 15 hours of downtime instead of the estimated 12, and it's been running ever since.
And so, like, there's been a lot of different web services like GitHub where people push code up to, and then now is Drupal.org going to become sort of the next GitHub, or do you see people still using GitHub, or what do you see as the workflow in terms of like people pushing code and like creating actual projects?
Yeah, it is probably the biggest question that's on people's minds right now. So we're not going to replace GitHub. I have no intention of replacing GitHub. Scott, Tom, if any of you guys actually listen to this, we're not trying to compete in that way. But no, there are things that GitHub can do that we can never hope to do, never try to do. The amount of time that they can put into crafting these particular UIs and many of these workflows and just some of the complex underlying stuff, we're not going to be able to match. But the reason that we didn't go with GitHub in the first place is very clear and simple. Like, the way that their model works, where there are no canonical repositories, and the primary means of interaction is the pull request, which is fundamentally restricted to a sort of dialogue between two people by default. It's not a wide open participatory process. It's not how Drupal works. So there are specific things that GitHub provides, which are just fantastically convenient. And maybe we'll be able to catch up on some of them, but it is not our goal to try to directly compete or anything like that. So, you know, pushing simultaneously to Drupal.org and GitHub is literally as simple as a single additional line in the configuration of your repository, and then it just works, and you don't have to think about it. So I see no problem with people pushing simultaneously to both places. I will sort of put out there as a general caveat, we restrict certain types of pushes to D.O, so you should make your first push to D.O, and if that doesn't work, then you might have to override what's in GitHub. We're a little bit less flexible than GitHub on, I don't want to get into the details there, but yeah. But basically, put it in both places. That's fine. The only thing that I would say is that you have to come home to D.O in order to get packaging, in order to get releases, in order to get test bot integration, in order to get, really most importantly, like, I am going to look down on folks trying to move issue queue activity over to GitHub. It's the discussions that happen about Drupal software stuff really need to be on Drupal.org in order for there to be a single clear place that it all happens. If we start to fragment on that, we're going to lose a lot. If there are specific, you know, things that you want to get on GitHub for this, that, or the other time, I have no problem with that. Absolutely. Push the repository over there, do some quick editing in line, and then pull the data back over. do it. Absolutely, don't hesitate. That's fine. That's great. The tools are there. Use them, please. But there are some things about the centrality of Drupal.org which are important to retain, and that have less to do with tools and more to do with workflows and clarity of there being, yes, there is a canonical repository. This is where Views lives. This is where Core lives. This is the one that you trust, and it is on Drupal.org.
Yeah, it seems like that was one of the biggest concerns for Angie Byron, was this fractionalization of the community where the people were using these decentralized version control systems on their own, just in their own workflow process, and just saw this increasing trend of more and more development work not making it back into the repository of Drupal.org. So what kind of moves have you started to see already with people starting to simultaneously push stuff that may have been on GitHub back into D.O?
Well, there was a rush. When we first opened up, we had a ton of projects come back over. And our average project creation rate, I'm going to ballpark this, so I might be off, but I think our rough average project creation rate prior to the migration was maybe 15 a day or so, maybe. We have had 500 or so new sandboxes created in the last 10 days. And that's just sandboxes. You know, there are additional projects that were created as well. So, yeah, I mean, the growth rate is, there's been a lot which has been brought back over. The concern about the fragmentation is an interesting one, because I have a different view on it than Angie does. I'm concerned about fragmentation. And certainly when we were on an incompatible version control system, when we were on CVS, there was a real possibility of things breaking apart because folks did not want to use it. And I can't blame them. But folks didn't want to use it, so they would move to GitHub, they'd work over there, and then they'd sort of sync back to CVS sometimes. But the longer that we were in that situation, the greater a chance that somebody would actually propose a real solution. Somebody would create a real solution where there was a real packager and you could just get all your stuff and didn't have to touch D.O. And we would have bit dirt if that had happened. But it didn't. I mean, we got off. So we're now on a compatible system. We're using Git, same as they do. You know, their Git repository is the same as ours. So it's fine to have stuff fly all over the internet now and fly to GitHub or whatever other hosting place. That's not a problem. As long as we're capable of reintegrating it back on D.O, I really don't think that stuff flying elsewhere is a problem. Like I said before, the only thing that bothers me from a fragmentation perspective is handling bug reports. Bug reports should never really be anywhere but D.O. We should be handling those problems on D.O. That's the central place that the software evolves. If it's not reflected on D.O, then it's not happening. And you know that you can have the code temporarily hosted somewhere else, you can use those tools to manage something else, but ultimately it's gotta come home to D.O. And I think we're in a position now where it's easy to, from wherever else you were, come home to D.O. So I'm hoping that problem is pretty much solved.
And you'd mentioned the sandboxes a couple of times. Yep. What did the sandbox allow people to do?
Right. Sorry. Yeah. So sandboxes are now anybody can upload code to Drupal.org. Now, it's one of the big changes. Prior to the migration, you had to go through a CVS application process and get viewed or applied, whatever. And then once you were anointed, you would be able to create projects. The sandboxes are a sort of, they do many things. And we were just talking about how they sort of have four-way identity now. But the basic goal behind the sandboxes is that you go to Drupal.org, you check the I agree checkbox that says, I agree to follow these various different terms of using Git on Drupal.org, and then you're able to create sandbox projects. So you could put anything in there that you want. You can put, you know, random crap code. You can put stuff that doesn't have anything to do with Drupal, technically.
Non-GPL code? Or?
Yeah, well, you could, and then we'd rip it out. The part of the Terms of Service Agreement does, in fact, state that any code that you upload must be GPL. And my understanding of the way that works, I am not a lawyer, nor am I even a legal liaison, and maybe Larry Garfield will yell at me, but my understanding is the act of uploading not explicitly licensed code is the act of licensing it GPL2. As soon as it hits our servers, it becomes GPL2. And if you upload any incompatibly licensed code, well, that obviously doesn't relicense it, but it will be removed. And we will, in fact, we will excise it from the history, which is considerably more, which is something that we can do fairly easily now with Git, but it's not something we can do so easily with CVS. But it will just be cut out, gone. So sandboxes are, the initial idea was, okay, we really need these because there's this global namespace. You know, there can only be one Views on D.O. There can only be one Drupal on D.O. But if anybody can create new projects, well, we're going to quickly start polluting that global namespace. You know, you'll end up with I don't know, all sorts of crazily named projects. So instead, if we have sandboxes, which are namespaced by the user, so that's the actual way that you access it. You go, like for me, you go sandbox/sdboyer/something, and that gets you to one of my sandboxes. By namespacing by the user, we don't have to worry about this global namespace issue. We can just have people create sandboxes all over the place, and it's fine. We don't have to worry about those conflicts. It's the same approach that GitHub takes, and there's a lot of good reason for it. GitTorius too, as far as I know. But so that was the initial thing, was we just wanted a sort of training zone for code that is not yet a project. It's now split into three different sort of identities that sandboxes tend to have. Number one is the projects and training for people who have just consented but have not been marked with the Git vetted user permission. There's an application process to become a Git vetted user. That's what allows you to create full projects or promote existing sandboxes to full projects. For people without that, they can only create sandboxes. For people with that permission, they can create a sandbox or a full project. A bit circuitous, I'm sorry. But that was the original identity that we envisioned for sandboxes was project and training. And we have that. Another one that sort of evolved is the sandbox that we never expect to be a full project. Good example is, I don't know, some scripts that aren't tied to any kind of Drupal major release version. There's a technique that people have been working on for locally caching Git data to minimize clones or to minimize bandwidth. And Randy Fay originally wrote it on his blog. Matt Farina took it and turned it into a sandbox. And I don't expect that that would ever be promoted to a full project, but that's fine. It exists fine as a sandbox. So there's this second category of things that never really will become full projects. They'll just sit in sandbox state, and they should never be full projects. The third one then is basically forks, which will probably go to your next question if you have this on the docket. But what do I do if I want to have a private place that I can work on Hacking Core, for example? Or, and this discussion was really originally prompted by when we very first opened for testing, Jen Simmons came in and said, so we've got this HTML5 crew, and they want to work on long-running issues related to HTML5 and Core. Well, it makes sense that they would have a separate repository where they can collaborate, they can work things out, they can, you know, sort of work on long-running stuff, and then when it's ready, they can, you know, take those branches and turn them into patches against the core itself. So with that model, you know, the goal is I'm forking a project with the intention of contributing back to it. We don't have a formal place for that. We don't have forks as a first-class concept yet on Drupal.org. And so sandboxes, again, you know, this is their third identity, is they play the role of the fork. Rather annoying right now is that the human-readable name for a project is enforced unique across all projects and sandboxes. So if you were to go to, at least of the moment that I'm saying this, if you were to go to Dries or Angie's user profile page, you see like four or five core repositories, or different listings of people who've cloned core and pushed it. And they all have different names. John Albin's fork, you know, some other Drupal core, whatever. But that's one of the small niggling problems that we have to fix, both that they show up in there and that the human-readable names of the projects are enforced unique across all. It doesn't really make sense. For a fork, it should be the same as the thing it was forked from. It only makes sense. So, yeah, sandboxes, the things that actually concretely differentiate them from real projects are, number one, they cannot create releases. So there is... It's not possible at all. What do you do? Whatever you want in a sandbox, but you can never create an actual release known from it. So there's no tarballs, never gets included in update status, which has an important corollary, which is that they're outside the domain of the security team. Security team has no responsibility for anything that is put into a sandbox. We have big, big flashing warnings, almost flashing warnings, on sandbox pages that say this is experimental code to warn off any unsuspecting users who might be coming in. You know, not developers, but folks like, hey, do I want to put this on my site? Well, it's experimental code. Buyer beware. It says it right there. That's another important difference. Under the hood, we enforce some disk space limits on sandboxes that we don't enforce on full projects, since it's possible for folks to just push stuff in, ensuring that we don't have folks trying to... Well, I don't want to talk too much about that, but we enforce certain disk space requirements on sandbox repositories that we don't on full project repositories. The assumption is that if it's created by somebody who's passed this human barrier, then if the repository is bigger than 10 megs, there's a good reason for it. But that's generally where it sits, is we trip off alarm bells if a repository exceeds 10 megs and we shut it off. If it's a sandbox, generally, it's a little bit more complicated than that. But yeah, so that's sandboxes.
Cool. And I guess, you know, finally, just as best as you can, describe what you foresee as, like, how is this going to change the development process for both contrib and core?
So much. And there's so much to say there. I mean, one of the big things that I haven't talked at all about here is per issue repositories, which is our sort of answer to GitHub pull requests and the way that we envision our collaboration working. The goal that we're moving towards is we want every issue to optionally have a repository attached to it, which means it's, you know, forked from whatever project the issue is attached to. So if it's a core issue, it's got its own core repository right there, and it's open, it's free for all for people to be able to push into. To be able to use a full-formed Git repository to work on patches for things like, you know, long-running things like dbtng or whatever, the difference is massive. It's enormous. Plus, it also completely gets rid of the need to what we've always called chase head. It pretty much chases head for you. Simply using Git means that you don't have to chase head much at all anymore. But there are so many collaboration things that can come out of Git. There are also, one of the things that I'm hoping to work on over the next couple of weeks is as a platform for services to be triggered off when pushes are made, very completely analogous to GitHub service hooks. But basically, it'll just be a little framework, and folks can write a quick plugin, and whenever a push comes into the repository, they'll be able to say, on this repository, enable this service hook, something like that. And whenever they make a push, that service hook will get all the push data, and then it can do whatever they want. It just has to get past a quick security review, and then we make it available for people to use. So there's a lot that can come out of that type of thing. I think, though, that one of the other things I've been pushing to, and we'll see where this goes, it's going to be one of the interesting conversations that will be had during this DrupalCon, but for years, we've had to deploy out of CVS. We've had, you know, CVS is the system that stuff is developed in, and then nobody, as far as I know, nobody actually uses CVS for their primary version control system that they use to manage actual real sites. So we've developed a lot of different systems over the years that wrap packaging system or version control, whatever, and make the deployment problem easier. One of the notions that I'm trying to argue for here at this DrupalCon, and we'll see how much purchase it gets, and we'll see how much I end up having not thought of things, but you can do sites top to bottom in Git now, completely in Git, and using full-blown clones from Drupal.org. You don't have to use packages. You don't have to use any intermediary stuff. You can use the full-on intelligence of Git in deploying your code and being able to run updates and being able to make small tweaks that are then easily integrated with any upstream changes. I mean, it's what Git is designed to do. So I think, actually, that if we can get some good best practices together around how you deploy sites and how you do all Git all the time or whatever we call it, getting some of that together could be really, really huge for what Drupal actually looks like in the wild and how it lives on real servers. Having Git behind your been working on a good analogy for this, but to use a full-blown Git clone of core or of any contrib module is to make that code that is running your website also capable of intelligently communicating with any other code that has ever contributed to that project. Now, in the past, anywhere off in the future, it can be merged, it can be worked with in an intelligent way using all those tools that Git provides. Previously, when you grab a tarball, I sort of look at like unpacking dead code onto your server. It's just dumb. It doesn't know anything about itself. It can't communicate with any other code that's like it. You do it all in Git, you have all of those tools that allow our collaboration as developers, you have all of them at your fingertips as a site builder as well. Your ability to control what versions you're at and reconcile problems in your inconsistencies in your trees, whatever, it's all right there in front of you. So that's actually one of the things that I think has not really been covered that well yet and has not really been thought of that well yet, because we're so stuck in this mindset of I need a wrapper on top of CVS in order to make site deployments work. And I'm hoping that if people step back far enough, we'll realize we can do it all in Git and life will be much easier.
And maybe quickly you could just tell me with the top open questions that you have that you're going to be asking people here, either with Dries or the community. What are sort of the questions that are going to be you're going to be asking and trying to figure out?
I think the one that I just mentioned about what the best way is to leverage Git in terms of deploying sites and also deploying not just like a site, but if you're building a large deployment system, how you integrate Git with that. I think those are big questions, and they're really important ones to get some solid answers on. I think that the collaboration model that we use, especially in the interim before we get per issue repositories, when we're still tied for the most part to patches, is going to be a very big question. There's still a little bit, as of when I say this, some lack of clarity around exactly what model we're going to use for branching and merging and patching things in core. Yeah, those are the big ones that are really sitting on my mind right now.
You said you'd mentioned something about branches.
Yeah, I'm thinking that Core is probably going to end up looking very similar to what it has historically. It only has like release branches in it, but we'll see a myriad of branches opened in, for the moment, these sandbox forks, and then in the future in Parishio repositories, which are people working on this or that feature. And in the future, the history of Core is going to look much more like merge of this, merge of that, merge of this, merge of that, as different features and bug fixes and whatever else are rolled in via real first-class merges into Core.
Okay, well, great. Thanks.
Thank you.